Welcome to A Burning Fire. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. We continue our study of the book of Romans, and we've finally come to the last chapter, chapter 16. Now, with the first 15 chapters, the Apostle Paul has been giving teaching and instruction concerning this great system of salvation. In fact, the book of Romans could be properly called the revelation of the system of salvation, God's way of saving man from his self-imposed condemnation by his sinful behavior and conduct. But the Lord has provided a way for man to be saved. And the book of Romans tells us about that system. But when we come to the 16th chapter, it's a chapter that's different from all of the other chapters. As you take your New Testament and you look at it, why, you see that there's a long list of names, one name after another. The chapter is just filled with names of people. And these greetings, and they were commendations, are means that the Apostle Paul uses to express his love in these words. Now, he speaks of people that were very special to him. They were people that he had known in previous times and circumstances. He knew many of them personally, and others they may have known through reputation or through mutual friends. But then we see there's an absence of a name that we would expect if the Roman Catholic doctrine of the Peter being a pope was concerned. Paul addresses a lot of Christian brethren in Rome. Peter is supposed to have been in Rome, according to Catholicism. He was supposed to have been the first pope. But the Apostle Paul never mentions Peter. He never refers to him whatsoever. He doesn't greet the pope if he was a pope. Of course, there's no biblical evidence that there ever was such a thing as the papacy, let alone Peter being the first pope. But the absence of the name of Peter is very telling, because here the apostle, writing to these brethren in Rome and commending them, does not refer whatsoever to those that some people call the Holy Father. But he does mention a lot of people. And he says things about these people that shows his love and his respect for them. Now, a lot of these names are very difficult to pronounce, and I'm not going to try to pronounce all the names that are given here in this 16th chapter. And I may not be able to mention all of the people that are here, but I'm going to mention some, and I'm going to show why Paul is writing as he is. He begins by commending a woman named Phoebe, and he calls her a servant of the church, which is at Cenchrea. Now, the reason that he refers to her in this fashion is because she had assisted in the work that he had done, and she is to be received as a saint, for she had been one that had supplied and helped so many. Some translations say that Phoebe was a deaconess. Well, the word deaconess simply means a servant. It does not mean that she was a female counterpart to the office of deacon. She was not that, but she was a servant of the church, and she was worthy of being received. As we go to the next verses, we see there's the mention of Priscilla and Aquila. Well, now, this man and wife were old friends of Paul. They first met when he was at Corinth, and they were tent makers together. It may be that Paul had converted them. But they had a very influential part in correcting the mistakes in the false doctrine that was being taught by a very eloquent preacher named Apollos. Apollos was still preaching the baptism of John the Baptist after the baptism of John the Baptist was no longer valid. But they corrected him, And he was a great, marvelous, stalwart proclaimer of the gospel of Christ. Now, it says of Priscilla and Aquila that they had laid down their own necks for his life. They had risked their very life for Paul and for the work that they were doing. Now, we're not told where this took place. We're just simply told that it was taking place. And we read of Priscilla and Aquila in different locations. And in nearly all of these locations, the churches were meeting in their house. We go to verse 5. We read a man here who is identified as a beloved person. He's one of the first fruits that were converted in Greece. You know, it's a wonderful thing to know that here are people that were converted and they were still being faithful. That must have been encouraging to Paul and to all the brethren. Verse 6 talks about one named Mary. I think there are about 8 different women named Mary in the New Testament. And then in verse 7, he mentions 2 people as being his kinsmen and his fellow prisoners. They were of note among the apostles. In other words, they were well known by the apostles. And he speaks of some who had been in prison with him. They were well known as being faithful servants of the Lord. And they were beloved and commended by Paul. Verses 11 through 15. There's a whole host of names, and I'm not going to mention the names, but I'm going to mention the descriptions, because it shows Paul's love for them, my kinsmen, and people who were loved, who had labored much in the Lord, who were chosen of the Lord, and they were called saints because they had been sanctified. Now, whether these who were kinsmen were spiritually kin, or maybe even fleshly kin to the Apostle Paul, nonetheless, they were deserving by the Holy Spirit, as Paul writes, for special mention. I want you to notice these people in chapter 16. He shows a personal concern that Paul had for these brethren. It shows the extent of his dear love for them. He had explained to them in great detail this system of salvation, which they had taken advantage of and belonged to the Lord. In verse 16, he says, "Salute one another with a holy kiss. The churches of Christ salute you." Now, the holy kiss was a custom of their greeting. We have a different kind of custom of greeting people today. When he says, "The churches of Christ salute you," now that's not a title. That's a possessive phrase. That simply shows to whom the church belongs. The church belongs to Christ, and the church has no divinely given title. And it's a mistake to assign to one. The church belongs to Christ. It's God's church. It's Christ's church. These phrases show possession rather than some kind of title. Now, will you please take note of the fact that denominations are not included here in the plural word churches? There were churches, but they were not denominations. Dear friend, let's understand something. If we could only get people to recognize this biblical fact, denominations did not come into existence until literally hundreds of years after the Lord's church began. The church is not composed of denominations, and it is not a denomination itself. These things came long after the inspired Paul wrote the epistle to the Romans. When he first refers to the term churches in the plural, he is simply referring to churches in various localities. These were local congregations, and they were sending their salutations to these brethren in Rome. Now, in verse 17 and 18, Paul makes a very important comment, and we're going to skip over this right now and come back to that because it is important. We'll either mention it today or maybe in our lesson tomorrow. In verse 17 and 18, we'll pass over that, as I said, and we'll go on to verse 19. He said that their obedience had come abroad unto all men. Now, Paul had earlier commended the brethren in Rome for their faith. It was known throughout. Now he commends them for their obedience. Friend, when the Apostle Paul talks about the faith that saves, he's talking about the faith that obeys. One does not have a saving faith unless he obeys the gospel of Jesus Christ. Beginning with verse 21, he talks about some who were his fellow workers, who were his kinsmen, who were his host, who were, well, his one named Erastus. He's a chamberlain for the city, and that would meant he was a treasurer. He was a part of the civil government. He calls another one of his brethren. In verse 25, he says, "Now to him that is of power to establish you according to my gospel and the preaching of Jesus Christ, according to the revelation of the mystery which was kept secret since the world began, but now is made manifest by the scriptures of the prophets, according to the commandment of the everlasting God, made known to all nations for the obedience of faith." Paul stresses throughout Rome, the Roman letter, the obedience of faith. The plan of salvation of God for a long time was a mystery. It was not revealed. It's not mysterious, but it was simply not revealed. God did gradually reveal his plan for saving man. And that plan it's known now. It's known because it's been manifested, it's been demonstrated. There's a revelation of it by the apostles, by the inspired men of the first century, guided by the Holy Spirit. All the various ingredients and parts of this plan of salvation, it's now known. And there were faithful brethren in Rome for whom Paul had the utmost affection and confidence, and he cites to them and makes known to them his concern, his love, his appreciation and commendation for their faith in Jesus Christ. There's not a single negative thing said about anybody in the 16th chapter of the book of Romans. Everything that is said about all of those that are named are positive and commending things about them that shows Paul respected them as faithful brethren. And should not Christians do that yet today? We're going to talk about verses 17 and 18 in our final lesson on the book of Romans tomorrow, because Paul has expended a great deal of writing, a great deal of time, a great deal of concern for revealing the operation of the system of salvation that God has given. Some people falsely teach that salvation is by faith alone, or grace alone, or this alone, or that alone. It's not by anything alone, except alone by Christ. There are many things that God has included in the way that he saves man. And we're going to review these things in our final lesson on the book of Romans. We hope that you'll be with us in that program. This is A Burning Fire. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. Until next time.